All right, basketball fans, welcome back. Welcome to We The Rapscast, coming at you on Dash Radio. You can find us at Dash at 4 p.m. Eastern. And if you're listening this Tuesday, you're about halfway through the program, and we've just returned following up our preview podcast that we did with Justin Rowan, Through the Sword and the Chase Down podcast. If you're listening to the podcast form, this is a brand new podcast for you, so you might be a little confused about the Wayne's World time traveling noises you just heard. But just to let you know, you can find this podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, Podcast Addict, anywhere else that you get podcasts into your ear holes. I'm Dan Grant, at Slam and Danny G. With me, as always, is a man who is still living life like there's no tomorrow, despite what just happened. All he's got, he's had to steal. It's at Rusty Pedal Bike. It's Russell Pedal. Russell, following that game one, how are you feeling?
I am drinking a cup of tear-soaked tea and trying to figure out why I continue time after time to continue to be optimistic about this team and come back with analysis where I go, no, really, they could win things. And then just like our good buddy Harsh Devay made a very good point on Twitter. It's like, what other top seeded, like they're a three seed. Like, what other top team like that gets blown out so much? They've only played seven games. They've been killed like three times.
Yeah.
I mean, and nearly blew a closeout game. Like,
I think the biggest thing is that we don't have a really great feel for the team, because the team as it is, that was game 11. And I know that's getting to be a bigger sample size, but, you know, seven of those games have been playoff games, and yeah, you can't blame it totally on that, but I think that's more of why we keep making those predictions, because when you look at it on paper, we saw how well the Raptors were playing down the stretch with Joseph in Lowry's spot, and then you think, wow, I'll just plug Lowry in there, and that's an instant upgrade. And obviously, Kyle Lowry's been good. He was one of the best players on the team tonight, but basketball isn't a one-man game.
Yeah, that's a fair point. I mean, the 11-game thing, like, since Lowry's been back, and of course, you know, teams that are playing in the playoffs, whether it be the Bucks or the Cavs, you know, their best players or their main rotation players, for the most part, have had a lot of reps together. And I'm not making excuses for the team. Like, that was a really bad performance. At the same time, I will say it's a really good performance by Cleveland. But, you know,
yeah,
the Raptors just weren't adequately prepared for this game. And it's sad after, you know, getting destroyed in last year's conference finals, apart from those two games that they won at home. It was essentially a sweep otherwise. Like, in the four games that they lost by a huge margin each time. So it was, you know, you'd think with the year's difference and making the acquisitions that were pretty well for this series, like, why else do you make big swing moves like that if it's not to give Cleveland a run? You know, your whole season is basically leading up to this moment, and you're here, and you just lay an egg in that first game, and it was tough to watch. It really was.
Yeah, it really looked like that was Cleveland's best punch, but then also at times they were kind of toying with the Raptors almost. It didn't feel. I saw William Liu, another friend of ours from the Raptors blogging community, on Twitter saying, he said, the worst part about this game is it feels like Cleveland has two or three more gears. And they're not even having to exercise them in this game.
Yeah, it's like the concept of flipping on the switch on D, and that we've been talking about, and we talked about earlier in this episode, in the first half. It's something that you know, a few people I noticed on Twitter did make mention of, like, okay, well, the switch has been flipped, and I'm like, I really don't believe it really was.
No, neither do I.
Like, they still had a, you know, a fairly middle of the pack defensive job. Like, the Raptors still shot fairly well overall. The defensive rating wasn't that crushing. It's not like they suddenly became an awesome defensive team. They were just, like, incredible on offense, really. And
yes, it's true.
They hit a lot of threes, and they got to the line a lot. And that's something the Raptors didn't really do outside of their main guys, like, other than Lowry and DeRozan, and Powell led the team in free throw attempts, but, like, people weren't getting to the line, and that's bad. And it's not, and I'm not, that's in no way on the refs. Like, you know, people talk about the refs not having a good whistle for Toronto usually, but it's not their fault. It's like, people weren't attacking enough. And
go ahead.
And I don't think that the Cavaliers didn't look like a scary defensive team tonight. It's just the Raptors didn't take advantage of them.
Yeah, I agree with that. Toronto had a lot of open looks in the game.
Yeah, I mean, that was it. At the beginning, especially, a lot of just open shots weren't falling. They finished the game shooting 46.3% on uncontested shots, but like in the early going when it kind of got away from them early, I think that the big thing was missing those shots more than like, you know, the things being contested. So I don't know.
Yeah, that leads into actually a really good listener question. I'm going to kind of sprinkle the listener questions like magic fairy dust through the second half of the podcast.
They'll
spur on some of the conversation. Aaron Steele in Hamilton, who is a faithful listener, and this is his first question, he has asked, why does Toronto keep relying on Patrick Patterson as a three-point shooter? Now, I have an answer for that. But Russell, what do you think that is? Why did they rely so much on Patterson when he's so inconsistent? He was 1 of 5 tonight, and he missed some really like wide open looks.
It's a tough question to answer. I'm looking forward to hearing yours. Why don't you go first, and then I'll kind of weigh in because I had to put a bit more thought into that.
Yeah, that's fair. I haven't broken down the numbers from this season specifically, but I wrote the Patterson player preview for Raptors HQ coming into the season, so I did a really deep dive on his last 2 years with Toronto and his 3-point shooting. The reason they rely on him is because at certain times he's really good and for really extended periods. He had the exact same 3-point percentage as the last 2 seasons in Toronto, right around 36, close to 37%. But he had in 2 month long stretches where he shot 44-45%, which is an elite number. And then he'd have other stretches where he fell completely off the table. Now, you might think, why would you rely on a guy like that then if he's so inconsistent? But it's because but this is pre-Ibaka, you know, pre-Tucker, pre-having those guys to stretch the floor from the 3 and the 4 spots. But the reason they relied on him is because they didn't have anyone else originally. And now that's become such an ingrained part of his game in the way they use him. I think that they kind of just assume he'll be able to do it. I know you have to go away from it at some point, but he seems to always figure it out eventually. So the fact that they has that proven, I'm doing air quotes, no one can see me on the radio, but proven track record is got to be the reason. That's the only thing I can think of because it's really where he provides most of his value on offense. He doesn't really do much else on the offensive end.
Yeah, but I mean, yeah. And prior to this in the Bucks series, he shot 35% from 3. Like it's not lights out, but it's not like an absolute black hole. So
yeah.
And like you said, he shot 37% this season. And you have to look at it too. Like he's one of your top shooters, and you know he does it from the 4-5 position, which there's value in that beyond like the percentage. Like that percentage is worth a little bit more coming from your big man, right? When he can do that and he can give you that look and stretch the floor out. So he had a horrible game. Like make no mistake about it, he shot 1 for 7 and 1 for 5 from deep. Like he did not look good in this game. Was a minus 14 off the bench, and you know, generally the bench was actually not that bad in this game. But whether it was from the with the Lowry and the bench lineups, or the Lowry and Ibaka with the bench lineups were effective, but they were the only effective things in this game. So like, you know, all the starters had like horrible plus minuses, and and Pat throw Patterson into that mix. But I don't know. He's one of those guys like you said, he gets hot for certain stretches, and as much as I feel like he's cold more than he's hot, like it all evens out. And you look at the numbers, you're like, okay, I'd let a guy like that shoot. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. It's pretty funny. As you were talking there, I kind of looked up his splits because I wanted to do the same thing. When I heard you say he shot 37% this year, I thought maybe you misheard what I said before, but he did shoot 37% this year. And that's the exact same number as what he shot the past 2 years. So it's 3 years in a row now.
Yeah.
And I went back and looked at his monthly splits. And again, he's 35% in November, 41%, close to 41% in December, 40% in January, drops in February to 27%, although that was only in 5 games. Mm-hmm. And then in March, in 16 games, he's back up to almost 41% again, and in April, 43%. So he was actually pretty consistent this year, except for that one blip in February.
Well, he shot 37.2%, and you know,
yeah,
that's good. Like Kevin Love shot 37.3%, and no one's asking why Kevin Love's shooting threes.
Yep.
So,
No, exactly. It's part of his game, and it's, you know, really what he brings. And when he gets more volume, too, you can see the months where he shoots more threes, generally, mm-hmm. he shoots better. He's a guy who warms up and kind of gets hot. You can see there's games like that, too. I think Matt Devlin and Jack Armstrong have been trotting out a stat all season long on the
Jack
broadcast.
Jack Armstrong ain't tweeting out anything.
No, unless it's coming out of a chicken that he's squeezing. Or a bird.
Squeezing the bird.
Squeezing the bird. Jack loved LeBron grabbing the beer more than any person.
Oh, my God, yeah.
Had a right to.
We got to talk about that at some point, by the way.
Yeah, we will. We'll
get to that.
A little later on. But, yeah, so with in terms of Patterson making threes, they said when the Raptors had some ungodly record when Patterson made two or more threes, and it was a staple of Raptors home broadcast this mm-hmm. year. So I think that's why, because I think if he's making those three-pointers, it just gives your lineup so much more depth, and it gives you that, you know, as you said, he's one of your best shooters when he's on. So getting that shooting from your secondary guys, it's pretty much why the Raptors lost today. They didn't get contributions from anyone secondary except for PJ Tucker.
No, and that's it. And I mean, with Patterson too, you got to keep in mind that his game, when you have a player whose game on offense is so, like, he's a solid defender, and that's mostly where his impact comes. Like all the parts of the lineups that he's been part of that have been so successful for the Raptors over these last few years, it's largely because of the defense he can bring at that position and the way that he's a pretty versatile defender. But like at the end of the day, over 65% of the shots that he takes are from 3-point range. So you have to live with the fact that there's a streakiness involved there. Like outside of like Steph Curry and a couple other guys, like there are very few people you can rely on to always be solid from three-point range. So.
That's true. And I think that's been something that's obviously plagued the Raptors, but it's not just the Raptors. There's been a lot of stats bouncing around this postseason about how role players have been struggling in road games. And we saw it in the last Spurs-Grizzlies series. If you've been watching other series other than the Raptors, it's become a real trend around the NBA.
Well, even like Ibaka had some bad performances on the road in Milwaukee the last series compared to his home games.
Sure. Yeah. So I don't know if it's just a comfort with your... I mean, I don't know. I actually don't know what it is. I don't even want to speculate. Yeah. But it's something that's happening. And so the fact that Toronto does rely so heavily on their depth for that secondary scoring is something that's going to be, you know, tough, especially game two has now become a must-win game.
Yeah, essentially. If you want to make this series competitive and have any shot of, you know, winning it, it seems like weird to even talk about that after watching that game. But, I mean, like you said, you clean the slate right here. And you
yep.
Game two, like you lost this game by 1 point, you lost it by 50, you still lost it, and now you got to win the next one.
Totally. I mean, I think if game three in Milwaukee taught us anything,
yeah.
It taught us that, you know, you can look really bad in one game and a lot better the next game as we just kind of change how the game is played and make some adjustments. For all the, you know, criticism of Dwayne Casey not adjusting in game, he tried some interesting lineups tonight.
Yeah, for sure. I mean,
it was reactionary, which is not what you want, but he was trying to figure out something that worked.
Yeah, and I mean, some things did fairly well, like the, you know, the Lowry plus the bench unit with Ibaka, which we saw at like successful moments in the Bucks series went quite well. Like, it's a Lowry, Joseph, Powell, Tucker, and Ibaka. That lineup outscored the. Cavs by 7 points in 5 minutes. That same lineup, but with it's not even that same lineup, but Lowry and Wright at the two guards, and then Powell, Tucker, and Patterson. Same kind of thing. A lot of versatility there. That lineup outscored the Cavs by five. So there were some lineups that were working. It was really the starting lineup that just really laid an egg. You know, that's, I think you're talking about adjustments. It's curious to me that, you know, I was talking about in our preview about Valanciunas making an impact, and I'm taking that back. I don't think there's any hope of that. He's lost his ability to post up. He's making bad decisions. His effort on defense. Like there are so many times I felt in this game where I just really wanted him to get up and just contest someone at the rim, and he wasn't doing it. Like if they were like a step ahead of him, it's like he just gave up on a lot of plays on defense, and it was frustrating to watch. And you know, I look at that starting lineup, and it felt really stale tonight, and it was a big part of the problem from the jump, you know. So that lineup saw 13 minutes of action and was a minus 10. So, you know, they lost the game by what, 11?
Yeah. I completely agree with that, because how hard is it when you're 7 feet tall like Jonas is to stick your hands up in the air? You know, that's you can play pretty effective defense.
Consistently. Like, that's the thing, too, is you can show flashes. Like, there was one point where LeBron took it to the rim, and he got vertical twice, and he denied him, and it was just like, what is this? Like, why can't it be this more consistently? Like, just that effort and, you know, using your body, you're a big guy like that, and to use the verticality and to deny people, like, why can't you make that part of your game? Especially if all of a sudden, like, what's really weird about it is he used to be such an efficient player in the post. Like, you don't want to, you know, run your whole game on post-ups, but he was efficient in that sense, or in the pick and roll. And it's just like, he just looks, you kind of looked at his offense and he's got like these just amazing numbers, like offensive rating, true shooting percentage and stuff like that over the last few years. Some of the best in Raptors history. And you watch him now and I'm like, how is this guy ever efficient on offense even? And if he can't play defense and he's, you know, bumbling around on offense now, I'm starting to lose a bit of hope in him making an impact in this series. Like, I still believe in him as a player and I still like him. Mm-hmm. And I still, you know, we were having a conversation online today with fellow Raptors HQ guy, Daniel Hackett, and talking about like roster construction and the possibility of bringing back all these guys and who you'd have to trade. And, you know, he said there's a way to kind of bring back the four free agents as long as you get rid of, like, say, Joseph and one of Carroll or Valanciunas. And I was like, I'd like to keep Valanciunas in the end. Like, we'll talk more about that in the offseason, obviously. But I think I'd like to keep Valanciunas because he gives your team a different look, right? Like, if you need to go big against someone, if you need to, and as we've talked about, like, if you need rebounding, he's, like, arguably the best rebounder in Raptors history. And there's something to be said for that. Like, we always harp on him for his offense and his defense, but he's a consistently good rebounder. So I don't know, but I really have to take back what I said about wanting him to be an impact player in this series. Like, at this point, the point I was originally trying to make was I look at the starting lineup and I'm kind of disappointed in Casey for going back to it, knowing the limitations it had in the last series. I mean, this is a completely different series, but I felt like, I even said before the game on Twitter, I mentioned the fact that I would have really liked him to get weird with this, like, leave Norm in there because of the spark that he's been giving you, like, ride the hot hand. But, like, you know, maybe put Tucker in from the jump if you're going to really put him on in place of Carroll, if you're really going to put him on LeBron. So, like, trotting out a weird lineup of, like, Lowry, DeRozan, Powell, Tucker, and Ibaka, maybe, because then you're forcing the Cavs to go, like, well, what are we doing with Tristan Thompson, and what are we doing with, like, you know what I mean? Like, it forces them, rather than everything being reactionary. I thought that would have been a really interesting move. Now, that's a lineup that would lack rebounding, especially with Thompson and Love, but it'd be interesting because I think that the big thing we learned in this game is the Raptors have to get out in transition.
They did a great job of that in the second quarter.
They did, and that's where they had most of their success, and that's where they made that run, right? They made it like a 19-3 run there. And it was just getting out in transition because in the half court it's not working. You have to take advantage of the mistakes because the Cavs are just mad trapping DeRozan and Lowry and forcing them to give it to the other guys, and the other guys just aren't doing it. So if you get out in transition, at least then you got your stars that can finish a play or two, right?
Definitely. A couple points I wanted to address about Valanciunas, two things. One thing is I think he's really tried to expand his offensive game this year. You know, he's taking more jump shots. He's trying to these little fadeaways. He's trying to do more things. And I appreciate that he's trying to stretch his game. But like you said, the best parts about his game were how efficient he was, that he had some go-to moves. He was decisive and he would score consistently. You could count on that. And that's kind of gone away. So it's really hard to be good at everything. There's not a lot of big men who can score in that variety of ways. It's like Marc Gasol and nobody else, really. Maybe Boogie Cousins. So the fact that he's trying to expand his game, I get it, especially with the way the game is changing. He's trying to stay on the floor. But don't stop doing what made you good in the first place. You're kind of losing the forest for the trees, if I'm using that expression correctly. I might not be.
I've never figured out how to use that expression correctly.
Yeah. Well, you know what? It's our radio show, and I used it, and if anyone has a problem, they can write in, and we'll debate antiquated sayings next time.
We really appreciate listener feedback. So,
We really do.
If we need to get you to write in to complain about our use of things, then then we win. Yeah.
People love correcting grammar, so
they do.
That's a good way to fire people up.
I make a living out of it, so
yeah, me too. Okay, that was my first point about Jonas. My second is that Jonas. Excuse me, gosh, I always do that.
I'm convinced you're never going to get that right.
No, probably not.
No offense.
But it's just his self-correct now. But second thing about him, yeah, I think, like you said, it's going to be tough to keep him on the floor in the series if the Cavs are going to play the way they played, because he's just not – I don't know. He just doesn't match – it's weird that he doesn't match up well with a team that plays two traditional bigs.
Yeah, I know.
But Thompson is just so active, and Love's game is so inside-outside. They're just – I mean, and that's – I mean, this is the defending NBA champions, and that's – they're two of the big reasons why. They're such a, you know – a punishing duo of big men to have on your team. They're perfect kind of for the modern NBA. You can go with one or the other at the five. You can switch things around, play Fry at the five and have Thompson at the four sort of, but he still plays inside.
Here's the thing I'm curious about now. Hearing you talk about that now made me think about something. And it's funny because Patterson was so terrible in that game, but yeah. I'm curious if the most logical matchup based on the front court that the Cavs have, is it not Ibaka and Patterson? Because kind of have guys that can body up, that can defend, can like switch fine on those two. And
yeah, the next thing I was going to say was about the lineups, and that, you know, Carroll only played 15 minutes tonight and he was active on LeBron, mm-hmm. but the fact they gave, you know, Patterson, Tucker played 25, almost 26 minutes. Patterson played 22 and a half minutes. Powell, who I think a lot of people were worried was going to get buried, kind of the Casey naysayers were like, well, he helped him in that series, now he's going to bury him in this series. He didn't play last year against the Cavs. He played almost 21 minutes, so some of that was garbage time.
Yeah.
But that's, I think, right. I think that's what should happen. I think Carroll's minutes should be decreased even more if he's not going to give them anything. And if you can use Patterson, like you said, to kind of defend that group and have Ibaka and Patterson defending those two guys, you know, starting, and then you can bring in Tucker, maybe play Tucker at the four some, I think he could handle it. I know Tucker has to guard LeBron, but LeBron plays the four now and then.
Oh, absolutely, he does. He's some of his most effective minutes are at the four.
Oh, totally. And creating from the four, too, when he can create from the elbow. He's just...
Absolutely.
Devastating. He's so damn good. Anyway. all right. I have another listener question. And this is kind of what we've been talking about, but I wanted to get your kind of... I want to answer the question. Pierre Cariati wants to know, are the Cavs actually that much better than the Raptors? Obviously, the game lost. We lost by 11. When he wrote this, the lead was 21. Mm-hmm. He said, are the Cavs actually 21 points more talented than the Raptors? I just don't believe the gap is that big. There was just too many 7-0 or 9-0 runs. It might be more mental at this point. I think the Raps will adjust and make this at least a six-game series. But what specific adjustments do you think they need to do to push themselves over the top? Now, that's a big question, mm-hmm. but... Russell, maybe you could give me two or three specific things that you'd like to see for next game, for game two.
I think I'd like to get Norm Powell back into the starting lineup and Valanciunas back out. I think that you found something there. You won the last three games before this one because of that move. And uh-huh. it was matchup based with the Bucks, but if it ain't broke, don't fix it. So it was something that was working, so why change it now? Like, I don't know. I'd like to see more. Honestly, I'm ready to see Valanciunas. Like, sorry to say this, because again, I'm one of his biggest, supporters. But I think that based on what I saw tonight, I wouldn't be that upset to see him kind of fall out of it entirely. Like, I was at the point where I was wondering if I'd rather see Poeltl playing his minutes, just because he's a better defender. So, yeah, I think that a big adjustment is going to be, like, not trying to force the Cavs to play your game, because that's not going to work. That's my big thing.
Yeah, I agree. I like that one.
Yeah, and I think just being creative as possible with your front court combinations and, you know, staggering minutes and stuff like that. All stuff that Casey does fairly well in general, but it's just trying to find combinations that work and not sticking too long with things. Like if they go into game two with the same starting lineup, I'm going to be supremely disappointed.
Yeah, I don't think they will. I don't think there's any chance that happens.
Yeah.
Josh Lewinberg tweeted out a really terrifying stat, which is that LeBron is 18-0 in playoff series when his team goes up 2-0, and 11-0 with since he returned to Cleveland. So we said game two is a must win, and it sounded maybe like hyperbole, but game two is a must win. So I think, you know, we're going to see Casey, you know, throw everything with the kitchen sink, and I don't think you can try to match up Jonas against those guys. Because, I mean, I get why the mentality says, well, they have two bigs, so we need two bigs traditionally, but it's not working. So they need to try something else.
They have to look desperate. There were too many times where I felt like it was too lackadaisical. Like they weren't. I'd like to see more driving, more trying to draw contact at fouls, more getting out in transition. Like I said, like they worked in spurts, but like I think you really just got to do that and maybe more. Like I don't know, throw a couple different looks. Like do some full court pressing or something. I don't know. Like it just seemed like there was what was going wrong kept happening for too long. If that makes sense.
Yeah, that's true. I was just reading. Sorry, another listener question came in on my phone.
Hot,
reviewing it to see.
Hot off the presses.
Hot off the presses from Jeff McLeod. He said in the first half of this show, we responded to Justin James' question, which was, "Why does the fan base hate Casey?" Jeff says, "I think it's because he doesn't do things that seem obvious to the casual fan, like play Powell. How come he's the only guy on the planet that can't recognize this? Similarly, why didn't he play James Johnson last year? What's going on here that I didn't understand?" Well, Jeff, I want to respond to this because you're my friend and I love you. But, I mean, Powell played in that game. We've just talked about we think he should play an even bigger role. But I think, I think it was a mistake. I think we've said, I think we agree with you. We both, Russell and I have both talked about how we appreciate, you know, the macro of what Casey does, but in the micro sense, Russell, you said you were disappointed with the way that the starting lineup, they went back to the old lineup. Just kind of, it was weird. I don't think I felt disappointed, but when I saw that it was, you know, the game, I definitely was reticent when I saw that it was Valanciunas and that Carroll was still in there. I mean, the last time we saw that starting lineup was the awful blowout in game three against Milwaukee.
Yeah, there was no point where I didn't see it and go like, oh, let's see if this is, even though I wanted to see what Valanciunas could do in this series, I didn't see that lineup and go like, all right, let's see what Valanciunas can do in this game. Let's feed him early. Like, it's funny, like looking back a year when playoff Jonas was had such a huge impact in the games that he did play, like outside of his injury and well, outside of the Cavs series, I guess. But he's come a long way from that. And it didn't give me any confidence. Like I saw it and I was like, you'd want to react like, oh, okay, let's see what happens here. It was like, this has the potential to not go well. And I wasn't optimistic that it would go well and it didn't. So,
yeah.
But anyway, it's like we talked about in the first half. It's one of those things that I can't pretend to really know better. I'm sure Casey has a good reason and there's a reason that he gets paid millions of dollars and we don't, but at the same time it's got to change. Just has to.
Yeah, it's true. I want to answer the other part of Jeff's question where he mentioned James Johnson. I know this is kind of not part of what just happened, but just quickly, James Johnson last year was not James Johnson this year for the Heat. He got in insane shape in the offseason, I think because he realized he was kind of on his way out of the league. He'd been bouncing around, and the Heat training staff got to him. He lost 30 pounds, and he was in a really low-pressure situation. He didn't really start playing until the Heat were like 10-30.
Yeah.
And when he got in there, obviously he played really well, and good on him, because he's obviously been a physically supremely talented dude. But Casey likes veteran professional dudes because he is a veteran professional dude. And I think if you watch James Johnson a lot, he had the talent, but he was a knucklehead. He liked to take long twos when he shouldn't. He liked to try to play point guard. He often took liberties. He fell asleep on defense. And yeah, he's physically talented, but if he's doing that crap, like I fully get why he didn't play. He didn't play because he didn't play very well. Yeah. He'd show flashes here and there, but he got plenty of opportunities.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway, we don't need to talk about James Johnson.
No, not right now.
No, we're done. Okay, with that. Let's see. I have one more listener question, I think. I'm just going to find that here. Okay. So, Francois, where are you, Francois? Oh, he wanted to know, why do the Raptors, Francois, I'm paraphrasing this because I can't find your exact question, but I remember it. He wants to know why the Raptors so infrequently chase offensive rebounds, particularly given how good the team was. And we talked a little bit about this because it seemed like a strategy against Milwaukee.
Yeah.
Tonight against Cleveland, he echoed kind of your Valanciunas distaste, saying he saw Jonas just kind of standing around, not even making an effort for them at times.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, Toronto. Yeah, three offensive rebounds for PJ Tucker, but beyond that, not too much going on.
Yeah, and that's kind of his game, right? Like he's aggressive, and
yeah,
so that makes sense. But yeah, no one. The other ones kind of just, I guess, fell into people's laps. But I would say that, you know, when you decide to not crash the glass, the general reason is because you want to make sure that everyone's back on defense.
Yeah.
So with a team like Cleveland, that's just such a force on offense. I understand that strategy. Like, you want to kind of have a get it right the first time system. So hit your shot and take care of everything on defense. Like, the same reason you ever don't crash the boards. Like, it's good in certain situations, but it makes sense not to when you don't as well. So
it's true. I wrote in the Raptors HQ roundtable that I thought especially against Love, when Love's on the floor, mm-hmm. they should at least send one guy to kind of get in there and muck it up with him, because we saw it tonight a couple times. His outlet passing is just so unbelievable that even when you're getting back in transition, he's able to pick you apart. He had that one huge bomb to LeBron where Lowry wound up fouling LeBron right out of the basket.
Yeah.
And the Raptors were back. They had four guys standing around LeBron. They were back in transition. And if you're just giving him uncontested defensive rebounds, he can turn and just fire that. So I really think that – I'm not saying you need to sell out for the offensive rebound, because obviously with Thompson and Love, the Cavs have pretty good defensive rebounders themselves. But I do think you need to get at least one guy in there to kind of make it a little harder for them to kind of turn and go.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Let's see here. Russell, all right. So game two goes Wednesday at 7 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
So we've said what we want to see. I want to know what your prediction is for the game. What do you think we will see?
Yeah, this is going to get sad. the funny thing about this is the fact that Lowry and DeRozan, generally, when they play well or well enough, the Raptors have a pretty good chance of being in games. And truth be told, they both played fairly fine. They have bad plus minuses, especially DeRozan at that minus 32 is just ridiculous for playing 35 minutes. Especially when, Lowry is backcourt mate was only a minus 13. Cause as we said, like the Lowry plus the bench units really made an impact. But, Lowry putting up 20 points and 11 assists and shooting 7 of 13 from the field and 2 of 4 from 3-point range. And he had some of those good, like real, like, his signature kind of pull up threes in transition.
Yes.
And definitely. he looked like all-star Kyle Lowry. And I thought that was a really good sign. And DeRozan was fine. He didn't really, take to the defensive scheme against him all that well. Like I think I could have, he's had better games, but he wasn't horrible.
Yeah. They need him to be better than that though.
Exactly. So, I'd like to see them be a bit more aggressive and get to the line a bit more in the next game. I think it'll definitely be closer. I'm going back to the well on this, despite the fact that they'll be fine. It'll be close, but then they get blown out. But I think it'll be a closer game. I think that this team has to play desperate next game. They didn't really show that in this game. Like they seemed from the get go, they were fine losing it, but there were moments where, it got particularly bad, and like the camera cut away and I wasn't really able to keep up with Twitter, but you could see that Lowry was visibly frustrated, and
he was the only one that I saw who was like visibly angry.
Like he was like punching the air, and he looked like he was ready to, and we're recording this directly after the game. So I'm sure there'll be lots of post game comments to kind of unpack later, but that we're not getting as we're recording. But, I think they have to play desperate next game. Like everything you've done in the past year between the last time you faced these guys in a series, should have been preparing to face them again. And you come out with that effort in the first game. Okay, fine. But you can't do that a second time. You can't, because basically that spells the end of this team. It'll get blown up. Like if the Raptors get destroyed in this series, there is no reason to go into the tax for them. Like,
no, because it's true.
It's like, okay, your only hope with this iteration of the team, based on like Lowry's age and everything like that, is to put together a team that could give LeBron a run, that could maybe in a 7-game series squeak by and get a shot at the finals. And if this iteration of the team, like with, and we've talked about it, we talked about it in the preview, we talked about it coming into this postseason, the fact that, like, you know, this is the word being thrown around is this is the best Raptors team there's ever been. Like the depth, the versatility on defense, the, you know, the two stars, the everything like that. And if at the end of the day you're still going to get blown out by the best team in this conference, like what are you doing? And I'm not a proponent of blowing it up. I think it's fine to be a 50 win team and at least have a shot in the playoffs. But if you legitimately don't have a shot, like, I don't think anyone really believes apart from Daniel Hackett, really believes that the Raptors can win this series. And yeah. In even my saying in 7 games or hearing other people saying 6, you could feel there's a bit of bias in that we're all Raptors bloggers or fans, you know?
Yeah.
I don't think anyone outside of us is really takes this Raptors team seriously, especially after what happened with the Bucks series.
No, there's a lot of the Cavs in 4 and 5 predictions out there too from non-Raptors writers.
Exactly. So, I mean, I see that and I'm kind of like, I don't know. My big thing for game two, it's like if they don't really just play like that's the game 7 of the championship or like their biggest game of their existence together, then I think that'll spell the end. So I'd like to think, you know, I'm just hoping that they'll come out and they'll play like they give a damn. You know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that, you know, attention to detail is something that I think, you know, for all you want to say, these guys are professionals and they've been there before. You get amped up for game one of a series, especially when you're a heavy underdog like you are in this series. And you can see in the first quarter, the Raptors were pretty tight. So I think as dumb as it is, it's kind of a microcosm of this season. The Raptors have had, you know, these problems where they get out to bad starts. Well, they've been getting out to bad starts in series too. Yeah. And they did it last year as well. So, for whatever reason, that's part of their DNA. So, as we said, this is only one loss. I think game two is really going to be the referendum on this team. Like you said, there's a lot of big questions looming for this team. So, it really does matter. It can't be overstated. I was looking at just one little thing that's going to kind of paint the picture of that. I was looking at the three-point shooting statistics, and I thought PJ Tucker had a better game from three. And then I was also
his
looking
foot was on the damn line for every shot.
Three times. Yeah, I was just looking on Twitter to see if I could get any of those post-game quotes you were talking about. Eric Kareen had tweeted out, a third time for Tucker with his foot on the line. I saw one of them. And then also there was another one, too, that someone else made that when they had their foot on the line. So little things like that, you know. There's those little inches in the game that can kind of, you know, it turns a 10-0 run into like a 10-4 run into a 10-7 run, and those little battles make a difference. PJ Tucker is someone who usually wins the little battles. You know, he was fantastic tonight. He had 13 and 11. He was almost a plus in a game where the Raptors were often trailing by 20 when he was on the floor. He needs to continue to do that. That game was probably his best game as a Raptor. In terms of counting stats anyway. He was really, really great. Ibaka was good, but kind of inconsistent. But those two guys were good. They gave you what, you know, you hope for. No blocks for Ibaka, but you could see guys were hesitant to go into the paint when he was there, and that's the role that he provides. But you need the other guys to be better, and I think that they will be. I hope that they will be. It doesn't need to be all of them. I would love to see more DeLon Wright. I think the fact that Cleveland turns the ball over, and DeLon Wright is good at forcing turnovers. He's good. His length could make it really, really difficult if you put him on Kyrie. Obviously, Kyrie was burning up people tonight. He didn't even look like he was trying that hard for most of the game. But when he did decide to go, he's such a fantastic ball handler.
When he crossed over Norm Powell, it was like, oh, God.
Yeah, well, Justin Rowan, who was our guest in the first half of this pod, busted out the Jim Ross from WWE on Twitter with the it was Kyrie, my God, man, that man has a family. So yeah, and then The person I saw tweeted out said, you know, had a family. Because now Norm is dead. But
the thing is, though, I never did answer your question on what I think is going to happen in game two. Like, right. The ultimate result, I think that they're going to come out and play extra, extra hard, and it's going to make for a closer game. But honestly, after what I just saw, I have a hard time believing that they're going to steal one of these two games in Cleveland. I think that it's going to be a tightly contested game, but I think ultimately they're going to give everything they have to just be in it. And I think that when the chips are on the table, like, LeBron is one of the best clutch players of all time, really. I think it's going to be a little bit too hard to overcome. And I think that, you know, the champs are the champs. As much as I don't believe in this defensive switch, as I've talked about, and I don't think that the on paper gap between these two teams is anywhere near what it was last year. We just saw in game one that it's still, the Cavs are still the better team and they're favored for a reason. And I don't see them winning game two anymore.
Yeah, no, fair enough. It's hard to see for sure. Do you think Dante Jones get kicked out again?
Oh man, he played like a minute, had a dunk, and then two consecutive technical fouls. Like, and then talk about insult to injury, right? Like, he comes in, does that, runs his mouth, and then the whole
gets booted.
That's how bad your game was when Dante Jones gets into a game and, you know, trash talks.
Well, it was last year. Same thing happened, and they signed him at the end of the year last year. So his salary was only $80,000.
Yeah.
So his game fine was $8,000. No, it was $80. Sorry.
That's fine. But
his game, yeah, was, yeah.
But like that leads to another point we never quite got to, and you know, we're getting close to the end here now, so we might as well talk about it a little bit because I don't know how much time it'll fill. But like that overall feeling of the Cavs not respecting the Raptors, and it's not that they deserve it. They probably don't, but a few different instances, like LeBron calling for the off the backboard pass in a playoff game, reaching for that beer from the sidelines after missing a shot, and like goofing around singing the Backstreet Boys or whatever it was. Coming out of a
NSYNC.
NSYNC, okay, NSYNC. Whatever.
Pretty sure it was NSYNC, yeah.
Anyway, I'm not going to argue with you.
Far superior. Boy band, NSYNC.
Whatever you say, Dan.
NSYNC.
Whatever you say. anyhow, all that stuff, like, kind of made me mad. Not mad like, oh, I'm mad at LeBron. LeBron can do whatever the hell he wants. He's been to, he's been to six straight finals, and he's on his way to his seventh, and he's got multiple rings, three rings, and so many MVP trophies, four, and he can do what he wants. He's the best player since Jordan, really. And but the whole thing is, like, what made me mad about it is the fact that that wasn't enough. Like, the Raptors never responded to that. Like, never got out and took exception to it. It didn't seem like, you know what I mean? So it's one of those things, like, it just, the whole situation made me mad. It wasn't necessarily mad at him, but it's funny because I was having a discussion by text with a friend of mine, Stephen Ross, tonight. And it's not like a listener question, but he said, man, this is boring. Like, I want LeBron to like get hurt or something just so another team can, like, he's like, not to wish an injury on someone, but like just to see another team. Cause like this, it's boring that it's LeBron and no one else. It's like, and I said, yeah, it's just like when Jordan was playing, like you didn't really legitimately ever feel like someone was coming out of the other side, you know, like coming out of the East.
Yeah.
The Eastern Conference has gotten fairly boring. Like, as good as, you know, Washington shows signs of being good, Boston shows signs of being good, the Raptors look good at the end of the day. Like, LeBron's still in his, you know, he hasn't finished his prime yet. So it's one of those things where if this team, this Raptors team that I really, really, truly believed in, is this hopeless? Like, who's going to do it? You know,
someone's going to do it eventually, but it doesn't look like there's a light at the end of the tunnel right now. People often say that LeBron has had an easy road because he's played his whole career in the East, but I think all those guys are hiding over there in the West. Why would anyone come East and have to play him every year unless you're going to be on his team?
Yeah, I mean, exactly. Like, and what's going to happen? Like, what East team is going to suddenly become a super team that is going to have a chance of getting by him? Like, you don't really have the route to that. So, it's going to take, I think, before that happens, LeBron's going to just hit his drop off. That's the only thing I can see happening for that to really come to an end.
Yeah, that's fair. Well, Russell, next game happens. Today is May the 1st. I don't know where the month of April went, but we're in May.
Speaking of NSYNC, it's
very nice.
I'm not gonna sing the line, but hopefully everyone got that.
It was pretty good. May 3rd is the next game, and it is the 1-year anniversary, Russell, of Kyle Lowry's miracle 3-pointer against the Miami Heat.
Hey, that's neat.
There you go. So I thought that would be kind of a cool that day in Raptors history. Even when the chips are down, Kyle Lowry can sometimes come through with a miracle shot. Of course, we don't have to dwell on the fact that the Raptors ultimately lost that game.
I was about to say, and the Raptors being the Raptors lost that game anyway. We're remembering a really positive moment from a loss, but anyway.
Dominated by Dwayne Wade, who has close links to LeBron James. But, you know, it was a happy memory. I remember it very vividly sitting in my living room. I had just moved into this apartment, and I think I woke the downstairs neighbors by jumping up and doing a fist pump and a yell. I definitely scared my dog.
Oh, I flipped out. It felt very much like the bat flip.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, yes.
Like, it felt like it was going to go down in Toronto lore for that, like that. But, you know, of course, ultimately they lost, so.
But they won the series. They won the series.
They
so
did.
Win little battles and maybe you can somehow win the war. Again, this is what I've said from the beginning. What I want to see in game two and what I want to see in the series is fight. I want to see fight from the team. I don't care. It doesn't really ultimately matter. The way we've been saying, it doesn't matter, you know, one game is a game. It doesn't matter how many you lose it by. It really doesn't matter how much they lose the series by, as long as you show that fight. You show that backbone, and you show that you can hang with the Cavs team. Maybe you need to make some tweaks and some additions, change some things, play some guys in different lineups, whatever. But you need to show that you're able to do that. The Cavs, if we're talking about the future, they don't have a lot of options in the offseason. They're pretty capped out. A lot of their role players are really freaking old. I don't know how much longer guys like Richard Jefferson, Kyle Korver are going to play, mm-hmm. or how long they're even going to be effective. So you could see them, in theory, getting a little worse, just a little worse. And if you're getting a little better and closing that gap, it's going to happen eventually at some point. And what you want to see is that you've taken another step in that direction. And hopefully that's what we'll see in game two. We'll see the Raptors come out with some pride and really have a good game. One little prediction I'm going to make is I think DeMar DeRozan has a really good game too, because I think he was kind of marginalized this game. They forced him to the outside and doubled him a lot. And I think we saw in Milwaukee, he figured out how to pick his spots a bit better. He's someone who's always watching and kind of figuring out what they're doing to him and then picking it apart. So I see him getting better next game.
Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment.
Okay, well, if you're listening on Dash, that's the end of our hour and a half this week. If you're listening to the second half in podcast form, hopefully you enjoyed both halves. And we'll see you again next week when I believe that'll be after game four. Is that correct?
Game four happens on Sunday,
right?
If I'm not mistaken. Yeah, it's Wednesday, Friday, Sunday. So, yeah, by that time we'll have either be analyzing the Cavaliers sweep or talking about what chance the Raptors have of coming back in the series.
Yeah, absolutely. Or it could be tied, Russell.
Yeah,
it could be tied.
It very well could be, I suppose. But man, it's funny for people who heard this on Dash and heard the two parts together. There's a real juxtaposition there because I have to admit, in our preview, I was optimistic. I felt like clean slates. This could be an even series. But man, oh man, did that game knock the wind out of my sails.
For sure. Well, you know, next week we'll put the wind back in your sails is that we're going to be joined by Steve Sladkowski from the band Pup, who is a big, big Raptors fan. And I know him a little bit, and he's going to join us here. And he's looking forward to analyzing the series. I know he's probably a little downtrodden right now, but he'll enjoy it. And he has a wealth of Raptors knowledge and is a really cool guy. So we look forward to having him join us next week.
Excellent.
All right. So, Russell, where can the people find us?
If they want to find us on Twitter, it's at WeTheRapsCast, Facebook.com/WeTheRapsCast. And if you want to send in some feedback or questions that we like to get to on the air, it's WeTheRapsCast@gmail.com.
All right. Fantastic. Well, I am at SlammandDannyG on Twitter.
And I'm Russell Pedal at RustyPedalBike on Twitter.
Oh, yeah, my name is Dan Grant. I forgot to say my real name. I've become one with the Twitter.
I have become the Slammin' Danny.
All right, well, Get out the salami and cheese, mama, because this show is over.
Whoa, whoa, whoa.